Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Couple of Beatles questions today, as it so happens. Question number one, it was on this very day, back in which year, that Ringo Starr made his first appearance as a Beatle. Was that A, 1954, B, 1958, C, 1962, or D, 1966? Ringo's debut as a Beatle. When was that, anyway? And question number two, the first U.S. tour by the Beatles began on this day in which city? Was that A, San Francisco, B, New York City, C, Washington, D.C., or D, Chicago? So which city hosted the start of the very first Beatles tour in the U.S.? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of August the 18th. Well, it was on this day back in 1882 that Tchaikovsky's 1812 Overture debuted in Moscow. Tchaikovsky was appointed to write the 1812 Overture to commemorate Russia's victory over the French invasion of 1812. That composition debuted today in 1882. And it was 26 years ago today, 1997, that Alabama Governor Fob James joined the mayors of Montgomery and Georgina, Alabama, in the Alabama state capitol to dedicate a 50-mile stretch of Interstate 65 to the memory of Hank Williams. The section of roadway was renamed the Hank Williams Memorial Blast Highway. 1997, today. Robbie Robertson and the band performing Ophelia introduces this obit tribute published in The Guardian on the 10th of August 2023 by Annie Zaleski, titled Robbie Robertson's Best Recordings from Bob Dylan to the Band. The heart of the band, an integral player in Dylan's rise, and a stunning solo artist, the Canadian singer, songwriter, and guitarist has died, aged 80. Ronnie Hawkins, Who Do You Love, 1963. Robbie Robertson's early career is distinguished by his tenure in the Hawks. the group of musicians that would later evolve into the band. In the early 1960s, the Hawks backed the Arkansas-born frontman Ronnie Hawkins, touring the U.S. and Canada, and cutting a few studio singles. One of these records, a cover of Bo Diddley's Who Do You Love, reveals Robertson to be a lithe blues guitarist with a smoldering tone and a knack for shaping his live wire riffs around Hawkins' wildfire vocals and the rest of the band. As their career progressed, the band fell prey to the same foibles that other groups experienced, mainly creative dissension and substance abuse. That didn't always diminish their creative powers. Going by a jaunty Robertson tune like Ophelia, the song playing in the background now, garnished with warm orchestration like horns and woodwinds, the strutting song has a sunny vibe, despite downtrodden lyrics. It laments the disappearance of a woman named Ophelia, who seems to have left town for reasons unknown. Was it something like somebody said? Mama, I know we broke the rules. Was somebody up against the law? Although Ophelia's character is never fleshed out, Robertson's pleading tone and enigmatic hints make listeners care about her whereabouts and want to learn more about who she is. That same article also discusses the songs Like a Rolling Stone that he did with Bob Dylan in 1966, The Weight from 1966, and Up on Cripple Creek from 1978 by the band, and Robbie Robertson's Ghost Dance, his solo from 1994. Finally, TMZ reports that Robbie Robertson had been battling prostate cancer for a year and had just recently celebrated his 80th birthday in July. And the August 9, 2023 New York Times headline included this: as the chief composer and lead guitarist for the band, Robertson offered a rustic version of the country that helped inspire the genre that came to be known as Americana. Santana's Samba Pati introduces our country music. Tim McGraw and Faith Hill share a strong connection to Santana's Samba Pati. Tim McGraw surprised fans by revealing the one song that gets him and his wife Faith Hill in the mood for love, and it's not country. This is written by Nikki Dobrin, published on August the 9th, 2023, in People magazine. Country crooner Tim McGraw surprised his fans by revealing the song that makes him think of his beloved wife, Faith Hill, every time he hears it. Taking to the stage at the famed Sunset Strip venue Whiskey A Go-Go in West Hollywood to play an intimate set to promote his upcoming standing room only tour for his album of the same name, McGraw was asked about the one special track that calls to mind his beloved wife of 27 years. Well, there's one song, and it's really an instrumental, but there's one. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying this. God, please forgive me, baby, McGraw said to Yahoo Entertainment, referencing 55-year-old Hill. It's Samba Pati by Santana, It's kind of our song, he admitted. Samba Pati, which is Spanish for Samba for You, was released in 1970 as an instrumental track by the Latin rock band Santana. Fronted by guitarist Carlos Santana, the song is taken from the band's second studio album, Abraxas. My uncle told me one time, my Uncle Hank, an old hippie who lives in Napa Valley, he played it for me one time, years ago, on the road. He loved that song, too. He said, I'm going to tell you something. He says, never make love to a woman with this song on unless you intend to marry her. And so I didn't until I did, and then I did. McGraw, 56, continued, we always like to say we've been married 92 years in showbiz language. It's like dog years, McGraw joked on stage, before mentioning how he and Hill are now empty nesters with their three daughters, all having flown the coop.
Can I kick it to all the people who can quest like a tribe does? Before this, did you really know what live was? Comprehend to the track force, why? Cuz getting mentions on the tip of the vibe buzz. Rock and roll to the beat of the funk fuzz. Wipe your feet really good on the rhythm rug. If you feel the urge to freak, do the jitterbug. Come and spread your arms if you really need a hug. Afrocentric living is a big shrug. A life filled with, that's what I love. A lower plateau is what we're above. If you diss us, we won't even think of. We'll nipper the dog and give a big shove. This rhythm really fits like a snug glove. Like a box of positives, it's a plus love. As the tribe flies high like a dove.
Can I Kick It by A Tribe Called Quest introduces our R&B and hip-hop music news. As noted in a recent New York Times article, on August the 11th, 1973, the first elements of hip-hop emerged when Clive Campbell, also known as DJ Cool Herc, played music at his sister's back-to-school party in the Bronx, showcasing his innovative turntable skills. And as noted in a related website, the 50th anniversary of hip-hop will be the most epic year in hip-hop history. Celebrations will be held all around the world to uplift and honor every aspect of hip-hop culture. From concerts and tours to battles, competitions, and exhibitions, all of your favorite DJs, MCs, breakdancers, beatboxers, graffiti artists, and more will show up and show out to make this golden anniversary of hip-hop culture the most extraordinary year yet.
Me fui de vacaciones con mucha cerveza y canciones. Un shot por la buena amistad y por las bendiciones. Y si el día se pone feo, tú me lo haces bonito. Ya no pido más deseos.
As with most genres of music that surpass a half century of popularity, hip-hop and rap music have merged with other genres of music, including country. See Big Boss Vets' Country Twang. Rock music. See Aerosmith and Run DMC performing Walk This Way. Beach music. See the Fat Boys on Wipeout. And jazz. See the crooning of Snoop Dogg on Sensual Seduction. The expansion of the popularity of this genre also crossed geographical borders, racial and gender borders, so that today, hip-hop is celebrated internationally in festivals like Rolling Loud and increasingly by women rap singers like Chrisette Michelle and Lizzo. White rappers like Eminem, who performed at the 2022 Super Bowl, and Latin Hispanic hip-hop artists like Fat Joe, Pitbull, Cypress Hill, and Bad Bunny, performing their vacation song, Me Fue de Vacaciones, in the background right now. Chances are that this genre will be around and expanding its popularity for generations to come.
Thank you.
And in research and technology for music, we have this article titled, Music from Long Ago Remains Part of Us. This is published in 2020 by AARP from Global Council on Brain Health. Music on our minds, the rich potential of music to promote brain health and mental well-being. Now, whether it's a song your mom used to sing at bedtime, a hit tune from your teen years, or maybe a golden oldie you danced to at your wedding, many of us know firsthand how deeply music can embed itself in our being. We remember lyrics, images, and feelings from long ago, and these impressions are backed up by science. Researchers have concluded that musical experiences are powerfully embedded and encoded in the human brain. Not all the effects are identical, however. Music from childhood and adolescence seems to make a deeper, more lasting impression on memory. In addition, personal favorites stick in our memories longer than music we do not care for, music that fits our cultures. A key influence on musical taste from our earliest years makes a deeper and more favorable impact than music that sounds unfamiliar or odd. And some individuals are just naturally more responsive to music than others. Yet the childhood connection stands out. Researchers have demonstrated that music activates neural networks within the brain that can evoke very personal autobiographical memories. Studies using MRI scans have also produced evidence that music associated with the strongest memories sparks the strongest activity in the brain. But music has a stronger chord in some than others. Countless kids have chafed at having to practice the piano or another instrument, but the verdict of science favors sticking with it. Evidence is growing that music instruction during childhood helps kids' brains develop more swiftly and yields verbal and language-related benefits that may last a lifetime. And the earlier in life, the better. Studies suggest that music training that starts before age 7 pays the greatest dividends. At the same time, researchers are trying to learn more about the benefits of music education later in life as well. Research at USC, for example, found that music training in children speeds development in such areas as processing sound, language ability, and reading skills abilities that can help throughout life. The USC study suggests that children who trained in music developed more mature auditory pathways, meaning their brains were more advanced than those of other children in distinguishing sounds such as changes in pitch and melody. See also research at the NEA Research Lab at Vanderbilt University on the use of music for children with autism and their families. Research has also shown that music training in childhood may pay off with better verbal memory, the ability to remember words, a skill that may help them thrive in lecture courses, understand information presented verbally, and develop better vocabularies, all skills that help people succeed in life. Brain scans have also shown that musicians develop more gray matter in certain regions, such as those involved in motor and auditory processing. Such structural changes have been linked to enhanced motor and auditory skills. Studies have indicated that pianists' brains respond differently to the sound of piano notes, with more activity in their auditory cortex. Clocks. introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled, Paul McCartney Winked Right at Me. Billy Joel and Coldplay are among other legends who want their biggest devotees at the front. This is published in The Guardian on August the 10th, 2023, by Michael Cantor. Billy Joel has announced he's finally winding down his record-breaking residency at Madison Square Garden. After a decade of playing one sold-out concert a month at the New York venue, legions of fans have flocked to the arena to see him in that time. But early in the residency, Joel said he wouldn't sell tickets to the front rows because, he told Billboard in 2014, they were often sold at inflated prices to rich people. He'd see them sitting there puffing on a cigar. Entertain me, piano man. They don't stand up and make noise. He wanted the real fans at the front. So he began sending crew members to the back of the venue to scout them out. They get people from the worst seats and bring them to the front rows. This way you've got people in the front row that are really happy to be there, he said. And Joel isn't the only music legend to bring hardcore fans up close. Mia Edelstein of Tifton, Georgia said, Coldplay are me and my dad's band, and so I've been listening to them since they started making music. Her father bought her tickets for Christmas in 2016. The next year, the two arrived early at the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, wearing pins she'd made that said, Father-Daughter Coldplay Concert. The 18-year-old and her father caught the eye of a roadie who approached them, but he wasn't giving away the tickets for nothing. Sphinx-like, the roadie required them to solve a riddle. We had a little quiz where he was like, okay, can you list all of their albums from memory? Edelstein said. They passed the test and headed to the front, where they joined other fans getting an unexpected treat. A little girl who had a sign that said, I've been waiting, however old she was, years for this. She had been brought up as well as her family because they spotted that she had that sign, Edelstein said. I say it's my closest thing to a religious experience being at a Coldplay concert because I just start sobbing and singing along, and it's incredible, she added. So being up there with all of the confetti and all the bouncing balls that they would toss out there, back in the nosebleeds, you wouldn't get that experience. She keeps a small piece of confetti from that night in her wallet. And then there's perhaps the biggest rock legend still touring. A few fans who buy nosebleed seats get to see Paul McCartney, a chance to see a Beatle as closely as they might have at the Cavern Club in 1962. Among them was Katie Ryan, who was 15 when she and her then-boyfriend went to see Paul McCartney in Birmingham, England. Will and I were dressed up in our best Beatles gear with T-shirts and hats and wristbands. The whole outfit, she wrote in an email to The Guardian. Far from the stage, a woman approached them and said she could tell they were big fans. So she was upgrading them to the front row. We were absolutely gobsmacked, Ryan said. Everyone around them at the front had also selected by scouts, and everyone seemed to be in the same disbelieving, awestruck state that we were. Front and center, Ryan and Will did manage to interact briefly with McCartney. Couple of waves, and he even winked directly at me at one point. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in which year that Ringo Starr made his first appearance as a Beatle. Was that A, 1954, B, 1958, C, 1962, or D, 1966? Correct answer, answer C. That would be 1962 was Ringo's debut. When the Beatles formed in 1960, Starr was a member of another Liverpool group, Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. After achieving moderate success in the UK and Hamburg, he quit the Hurricanes when he was asked to join the Beatles in August 1962, replacing Pete Best. And the answer to our second question, the first American tour by the Beatles, began on this very day in which city? Was that A, San Francisco, B, New York City, C, Washington, D.C., or D, Chicago? Correct answer? Answer A, San Francisco. That first Beatles tour, which began on this day back in 1964, would cover 26 cities. As noted by the History Channel, History.com, on August 19, 1964, more than 6 months after taking the East Coast by storm, the Fab Four traveled to California to take the stage at the Cow Palace in San Francisco for opening night of their first ever concert tour of North America. ABC7News.com adds, the Beatles played San Francisco three times. The first concert was at the Cow Palace in August 1964, when the city was their first stop on an American tour. They returned a year later in 1965. Then, in August of 1966, the Beatles played at Candlestick Park in what would be their last stage performance ever. So let's close out today's program with Tchaikovsky's musical commemoration of Russia's victory over the French Grande Armée under Napoleon I. According to Britannica Encyclopedia, the French invaded Russia from October to December 1812. The French army was forced to retreat after Russian forces refused to engage them in battle, which resulted in the deaths of more than 400,000 French soldiers, the vast majority from cold and starvation. Here, then, is the 1812 overture, which debuted on this very day in 1882. We've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review was underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.